Good afternoon. I call Human Services Finance Committee to order. Members, please have a seat. We have a quorum present. That I wanted to begin with the approval of minutes for March 26, 2024. Vice Chair Barnett, do you want to move the approval for the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would love to approve the minutes for March 26, 2024.
Vice Chair Banner moves the approval of minutes for March 26, 2024. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The minutes for March 26, 2024 are now approved. With that, we have got a few bills today with us. The first bill is House File 3397, Representative Edelson, welcome to the committee. I'll move that House File 3397 be laid over. Please introduce the bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3397 goes to address many concerns that have been raised around peer recovery services. We have Kira Levins here today. They have done several stories about this issue that's come up. And we have been working, so in order to address some of the current issues that were raised, we put together a working group, Representative Frederick and I did, to address under all the concerns that were coming up. So the bill before you, it adds a mental health professional to provide supervision as well. We have an issue in terms of having enough supervisors, so that will go to hopefully expand some of that. It requires supervision to be face-to-face at least once a month. It includes a reviewing a recovery plan. It adds more details and puts the individual recovery plan in statute with expectations that a client is receiving person-centered care. It requires an organization to have certification from ARCO, which is the national certification, or MARCO, which is Minnesota Alliance on Recovery, that's the state. It also creates an appeals process. It adds language to ensure organizations have practices that support LGBTQ community. It allows the billing for the first two visits to Medicaid for the creation of the individual recovery plan. And where this establishes from is, so as a therapist myself, we are able to have the first few visits covered by insurance. That allows time to ensure that we're building a recovery or a plan that will meet the patient's needs. That's going to be the same for the scenario. So we want to make sure that those two visits, which are not covered right now, will be covered. It also makes clear that an additional billing outside of the 2 hours a day or for 14 hours a week must be approved by DHS. It adds the review for the commissioner for 15% of all claims to ensure that what's being billed is medically necessary. It requires that a client receiving services must do so voluntarily and must be provided notice for billable services. We were hearing concerns that people were getting treatment and getting care, but were not being notified that this was happening. That is a problem. It states that the transportation must be limited to the client's individual recovery plan. It requires that vendors keep a file for each client receiving services that includes the individual recovery plan. And it establishes a tiered reimbursement rate. So it would be one-to-one, so one peer recovery specialist to one client, and then one peer recovery, the second tier would be one peer recovery specialist to four clients. And that, of course, the 1 to 4 would be less. So establishes a working group on various topics related to peer recovery that we are just not going to be able to get done this session. There is a lot that needs to be done in the statute. So the working group will look at peer rates, audits, transportation, improving supervision for peers, acceptable billable activities, recovery community organizations, and any rules and regulations around that. And that will be reporting back to the legislature in December 15, 2024. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to go to my testifier.
Thank you so much. I have Tracy Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nora and committee members. My name is Tracy Anderson, and I'm one of the lucky ones. I've been in recovery from opioid use disorder for the past 11 years. Today, I serve as the executive director of the Minnesota Prevention and Recovery Alliance. We're a recovery community organization that was established in 2021, and we're unique in the fact that we provide both prevention and recovery services for youth and adults. I'm here today in full support of House File 3397. As a provider, we are seeking clarity and stronger guidelines to follow. We are also seeking to be heard and supported around barriers to our service delivery. This bill is the next step that's needed. It adds clarity to gray areas, strengthens guidelines for us to follow, and starts the conversation around sustainable funding mechanisms for effective delivery of peer recovery services. Today, peer recovery services are reimbursable only as a one-on-one service. Adding a billing code for smaller groups will be extremely beneficial as us providers offer group services, most times without a funding source, because we believe in the community aspect of peer recovery support services. I want to thank Representatives Edelson, Baker, and Frederick for their support. The process in drafting this bill was very inclusive. It included providers and legislators meeting in the middle to strengthen the delivery of this invaluable service. I have felt heard and supported during this entire time. I am honored to be a part of Minnesota's recovery community. If you have been lucky enough to work alongside of any of us, I guarantee you've experienced the passion, ambition, and strength that we all have. Imagine how strong our partnership between providers and legislators could be and how many lives could be saved with stronger guidelines and continued discussions around peer recovery support services. I urge you to pass House File 3397. Give us clear direction and guidelines, and we will work to reduce suffering from substance use disorder and overdose deaths in our state. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and sharing your story with us. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for getting us here. Thanks for championing this thing. I'd like to have Ms. Anderson come back if I could, please. She ran away pretty quick. So, Ms. Anderson, thank you, and we've worked on issues like this for a number of years, and I want to thank you for being a part of the team that a lot of us have been working on this together. Mm-hmm. We have had to tighten things up. We have had to strengthen what we're doing here. From an operator standpoint, you are one of those that actually has to fill in the forms, jump through the new hoops that we're creating, and again, a lot of these are flexibility so that we can do more group billing and some of these other things. Is there anything about this that has concerns for you from an operator standpoint? Is there, oh boy, this might be a lot of extra paperwork? And I know the task force is coming, and I'm supporting the bill. But I just want to make sure that I ask the questions of the people that actually have to run this thing. What gives you, if any, any heartburn about some of the changes being done today because we're putting up more guardrails because of very important reasons? And so I'm just curious about your reaction to that.
Yeah.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you. I think what I would say to that is I'm a little unclear about how the group billing will actually work. You know, if there's an additional intake or anything that we have to do with that. So I'm a little unclear how that would even work because group billing isn't a thing right now. And so I think that's, you know, the biggest thing. But what it feels like to me is just more clarity so I have direction to follow.
President Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just sometimes when you do these more things, a little thicker bill, a little thicker rules, it's good. You want clarity, and we're trying to do that today. But we don't get to sit in your chair, and but you also get to witness a lot of good people helping good people getting through this recovery world
right. That
is very challenging at times. So help us continue to grow this, and again, we'll keep getting it right. I'm looking forward to the task force reviews and the results from that in the future. So thank you again for all of us, Representative Frederick, for working on this, and Representative Fisher, everybody who's kind of put their hands on this thing. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Lee New Burnley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we expect a fiscal note on this?
Yes. We're waiting for a fiscal note.
Great. Thank you.
Any other member discussion? Seeing none, your closing remarks, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Baker. Thank you for being in all of the meetings. This has been a process. I think when we hear that things have not gone exactly as they should, peer recovery specialists it's a newer area, and I think that it has other areas that we can draw from though and put in guardrails and help streamline this process. And I think this bill is a really good start. And so I thank you, and I hope that it will be included in the omnibus bill. And I'm looking forward to that fiscal note as well.
Thank you so much, Representative Mendelson, for working on this and bringing this bill forward. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3397 be laid over. So House File 3397 is laid over. Thank you so much. The next bill that we have is House File 4839. Representative Ryan, I will move that House File 4839 be laid over. Please introduce the bill and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's really nice to be here after spending last year in this committee. So thanks for welcoming me here to talk about House File 4839, which would implement the program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, or PACE, in Minnesota. The PACE goal is simple: to help people receive care at home rather than going into nursing homes. It covers both certain elderly people as well as some people aged 55 to 65, making it available to people with disabilities who are receiving CADI waiver services. And it can provide underserved communities with high quality, flexible, and culturally appropriate care in the person's home. The New York Times called it the underdog of senior care, noting that PACE, funded by Medicare and Medicaid, has quietly succeeded in enabling some older Americans to age in place. A patient said, "It's worry-free. They worry for me." And a staff member said, "PACE is a special program that has the potential to greatly reduce the health inequity in our rural communities. This is how healthcare should work." Funding for the Minnesota PACE program rate study was passed in the 2023 legislative session, and the rate study report was completed earlier this month. A final recommendation on the Minnesota program framework is due by September 1st, 2024. The rate study will be reviewed at the upcoming PACE community stakeholder meeting later this week. Now, House File 4839 takes the next step by establishing the framework for successful implementation of the PACE program in Minnesota. And we still have details to work out after it's laid over, but the bill allows us to keep making progress. Now, I'd like to turn it over to our testifier, who will share more information about PACE services, how they coordinate with Medicare and Medicaid for reimbursement through PACE, state PACE programs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nilsson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So my name is Eric Nilsson. I'm our Vice President of PACE Operations for Volunteers of America National Services. We are based, or a healthcare provider based right here in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And one of our service lines is PACE, providing all-inclusive care for the elderly. We currently operate four programs throughout the country. We have one in rural Colorado. We have one in Lansing, Michigan, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, and a recently opened Louisville, Kentucky. We are also planning on opening three more by the end of this year. PACE started around the 1970s as a demonstration item in San Francisco, and then by 1997 was actually enacted into law to be a recognized healthcare provider through Medicare and Medicaid funding. As Representative Ryer mentioned, it is a Medicare and Medicaid funded capitation program. So we had half of our funding, roughly half our funding from Medicare funds, as well as the other half from Medicaid funds. Some people can enroll in the program privately, but that is typically rare. You know, the services offered are a wraparound all-inclusive package designed to be able to let seniors age in the home or the community as safe as possible. And as outlined in House Bill 4839 in front of you, which phone supports, the opportunity to provide PACE services in Minnesota requires a structured timeline to address specific federal requirements and deadlines. We are incentivized to avoid institutionalization since disenrollment from the program does not occur when a participant moves from a community setting to an institutional setting. Another one of the many benefits of PACE is the voluntary and involuntary action for a participant. They can choose to enroll and choose to disenroll. So they really are given a rare control towards the end stages of their life. Any capitation calculated for PACE must include all nursing home and skilled nursing facility costs in the service area in order to assure that that capitation will include all long-term services, provided that PACE would otherwise be part of a Medicaid fee-for-schedule type of service. In order for PACE to be an optional service available to eligible residents in the state, a state amendment must be filed with CMS. We understand that Minnesota would also require a competitive bidding process for PACE awards. This House bill requires that the Department of Human Services would also be required to outline this process. Awardees for PACE services would also follow the standard CMS process, and you can see outlined the intent and the sort of timeline, rough timeline that is given. And one thing that will be addressed in the fiscal year 25 budget biennium is the fact that DHS and the legislature will need to assure line item funding is available for service areas and intended enrollments effective hopefully in the next few years. And then DHS will need adequate staff and resources necessary to procure and open and administer PACE. As 32 states and the District of Columbia have already determined, PACE is an effective option for seniors and complement other waiver and managed care programs for dual eligible seniors. Again, PACE is really meant as a good complementary option for seniors to choose when they get to that near end of life care. Volunteers of American National Services looks forward to Minnesota offering this option. And on a personal note, as a born and raised Minnesotan and somebody who's from Duluth, I personally had to witness and watch my family, as well as myself, care for my grandparents at that stage in their life, but they unfortunately didn't have this option. And it's rough to have the family try to provide that care to get them what they need in the home all the way through the end of their life. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing this be enacted for other Minnesotans be able to have that as an option for their loved ones. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussion. Lee Newbrunley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer. I really like the PACE program. I am in favor of anything we can do to help folks stay in their homes longer. I think that that is necessary as we move forward in this world of healthcare. I am a little baffled by the timing of this, and I'm wondering, the fiscal note has not been completed, is that right?
Not yet.
Okay, that's what I thought. And so I'm wondering if we have any idea, and I apologize, I have not seen the rate study report that was released. But do we have any idea what the cost is going to be to stand this up? I mean, as Mr. Nielsen talked about, you know, the necessary cost with DHS to staff and the resources needed to make sure we stand this up and support it. Do we have any idea yet what those costs will be immediately to do what's required of this bill and then in the future to maintain this?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lee Newbrindley. The bill, the purpose of going forward, even though the recommendations aren't due until September, is to enable DHS to continue moving forward with the planning process and to be able to take action on the recommendations. So the most recent date that I've seen has been January 2025 to be able to have a plan. I'm looking over to my friends in DHS side of the world. The intent is to not have a great deal of building that happens until the ready to build, so to speak, until we know what we're doing. So I don't expect a lot of fiscal impact right away during this time frame, but I would invite DHS to come and correct me as they will.
All right, I can see DHS staff already to give us an update. I don't know who wanted to start. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Rachel Shands. I'm the Home and Community-Based Services Manager in the Aging and Adult Services Division at DHS. And Aging and Adult Services Division and the Healthcare Administration are partnering on the PACE study work that is currently underway. So as Representative Ryer noted, we submitted the actuarial analysis on March 1st of this year. That was the first stage. We are currently working on the next phase of the study, which is an implementation analysis and report, which is due in September. We do know that we will need some administrative resources to implement PACE. Some of the outstanding issues that we are working through and are going to be in this report are a regulatory structure for PACE, operational considerations such as enrollment processes and systems changes, programmatic considerations such as staffing for procurement, contracting, and ongoing oversight. So we are working through this and are planning to bring forward a proposal with a regulatory and administrative framework that could be considered during the 2025 legislative session.
Mr. Chair, if I may also answer the question. Nicole Stockert with the Department of Human Services. Representative New Brindley, essentially the reason why we are unable to complete a fiscal note at this time to kind of get at your question is because we need this analysis that's being conducted right now in order to know what the administrative resources are going to be. And so we don't have the information right now to basically inform the fiscal note. So that's why we are unable to produce that for you at this time.
Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does that mean we're not able to get a fiscal note for the bill that is before us?
Ms. Chance.
Representative Knorr, Representative, yes, that is correct. We don't have enough information to be able to accurately estimate the administrative costs that would be needed to bring up a brand new program such as PACE.
Lee Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification. That is really helpful and is just what I'm getting at. I guess I would ask, and clearly this can happen online, but I hope Representative Ryer, you're working with the department to find out exactly what they need to be able to get an accurate fiscal note to move forward even with this bill. And I would just add, and I'm not baffled by the timing of this necessarily. I'm baffled by the timing of standing up PACE at all. This has been in the mix for years. It's been in the mix for years. It's been implemented in dozens of other states, literally. And we actually could have done this last year. We could have actually stood it up and funded it and been prepared to keep seniors in their homes and cared for. We wasted $30 billion, and now we're back, and we're standing up a program right now. We are moving forward with this legislation. If this actually goes in the omnibus bill or moves forward this year, we are standing up legislation. We are spending money right now to stand this up at the department when we already know we have a deficit in the out years. We already know that. We know that this money doesn't exist. But we're going to spend state dollars right now to stand up a program that we already know in the out years we can't fund. I am baffled by the timing of this bill. I hope that at the very least the work is done so that we can have an accurate fiscal note, at least on this portion of the PACE program, so that we know at least what it's going to cost just to stand it up, not even fund the program. I mean, that's where we are with this. I'm baffled. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Representative Wright, did you want to add anything to that? Any other member discussion? Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Ryer. I'm very excited about this. I wasn't here until last year. So as a first-termer, I got to see the first step of this when you presented it last year. And so I'm so excited that you're back with step two. Just question to the department. I know we've talked about what PACE is going to cost, but I haven't heard anybody talk about what PACE could potentially save. In other states where PACE exists, does it typically save money? I imagine staying in your home typically does, but I don't actually know.
Mr. Nilsson, welcome back. Please proceed with the response if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. While I don't necessarily can't provide you specific fiscal data for, you know, each state, typically, yes, you do see savings in other states because those Medicaid funds are allocated to this program versus back into institutionalized setting. And even if that same participant goes into that institutionalized setting, we're covering the cost even at a discounted care to the state based on that doesn't change the capitation rate for the state. We still get the same dollar amount. We just have to manage their care. So typically you do see cost savings to the state in this regard.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much for that answer. I love keeping people in their homes because that's where people want to be. But I also love keeping people in their homes because it is fiscally a much sounder decision. So thank you again, Representative Ryer, for bringing such a wonderful next step to that process.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a tad bit surprising that we didn't hear ballpark, that we didn't have a magnitude, that we didn't have a not to exceed or any kind of thing like that. If multiple states are doing this and it's been implemented, what I'm used to is we actually look at what was done there, get the data, and then copy and plagiarize what worked well and change what maybe they had problems and difficulties with. I'm not hearing that, which is disappointing. There's a fiduciary responsibility being in legislature, and to hear of we don't know, we can't do a fiscal note on something that is not the first state to attempt to do something like this. So you can't even ballpark, but we're going to give you money to do stuff that you apparently don't know, haven't defined well enough to actually cost it out and have any projections. That seems a tad bit not ready for prime time, which is shocking because this has been talked about for a long time. I'd like to find out why we don't have any comparative data from other states. We don't have any studies and projections. We're going to do something that apparently the department doesn't understand well enough to actually ballpark and have a reference to. So I'm exceedingly disappointed with the execution that's been done on this bill. A lot of good things we try and we implement, but if we don't even know how to, then I'm concerned there will be unintended consequences, because we've had those issues come up in the past where we've done something and not been ready, and then we've had to throw how many hundreds of millions of dollars to software packages to roll out for medical programs in the state because they've been botched, the back end doesn't work. I've seen too many bad cases not to just, well, we'll trust the good intentions when you don't even have the plan sufficiently worked out to be able to ballpark what the expenses are, and to consider doing a bill where the department tells us we're not able to do a fiscal note because we don't have, the data. That's surprising.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Wright, for bringing this bill. This concept's been around for a while, and I understand it and, support what this is trying to do. I guess the thing I question is the comment in here about 5% are in the nursing home, it looks to me, if I understood what you said right, was a 5% assumption that would be nursing home assumed rate in that rate pool of cost. And I think one of the things we've talked about in the last year a lot is the delayed nursing home payment of the 18 months plus for the nursing homes that we have right now. We continue to see closures, and so I don't know for sure what that number is going to look like. My guess would be with the district I represent has a significant amount of aging people, and while everybody wants to be home, we all do in this room, when you have significant health needs and you need 2 to 3 people to lift you, most people that I've seen in the 40 years that I took care of seniors, that became a deal breaker, where home sometimes wasn't possible for a variety of reasons. And so I'm wondering if the comprehensive behavioral health units for seniors, behavioral health care centers, if how that all works together in this program to serve the people when they can't be home. I guess that's my biggest concern, is what type of facilities and how is that partnership going to look when you can't be home? Because when you can be home, everything runs smoothly, has been my experience. When you can't be home, that's the $10 million question. So if we see more nursing home closures, or we don't have senior behavior health units in place, which we don't right now, for severe psych needs for seniors or aging people that are over 55 that have psych issues and periods of inpatient need. So if those programs don't exist, what methods does PACE use to care for these situations? Is that considered in it, and how do you see that working as we move forward in Minnesota?
Representative Ryle, Mr. Nelson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. So, yeah, PACE addresses a lot of that in a lot of the staffing that we have. So, like, a lot of times we'll incorporate our own behavioral specialist on top of our own home care and social services. And so, you know, we do the best we can to keep them at home as long as possible, as long as they're safe, and that, and the families also agree to that care plan. But, right, there's always going to be a place for nursing home or other institutions, because there always comes a time where they have to end up getting placed. And so but PACE can help delay that a little bit in that process. And so they can go into a nursing facility. They can also go into an assisted living, where we cover the care hours when they're in assisted living. So there is some other options, but that can be a tough point, as if in this process of this transition, making sure there are those nursing home availability for them.
Representative Celeste.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. So in the states that you're doing this, are you seeing transitional discharge sites exist to the degree you need it for the population as it is right now, as it's aging in the states that currently do it? When they can't be home, are you seeing that the states have viable plans in place that is a comprehensive plan to serve them in the various settings they may need?
Mr. Nelson.
Yeah, Representative, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we haven't experienced in any of the states that we're in issues of, if they can't be at home and they need to be placed somewhere, we can't find somewhere to put them, because typically it is a pretty low number that does go in. It is roughly below 10% in all of our programs that are placed.
Representative Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I just want to add that in order to be in the PACE program, you have to be eligible already for nursing home care. So it is reducing the pressure on the system. It's not people who are aging into the need for nursing home care. So I see some benefit with the stress that the nursing home care system is under.
Representative Osnica.
No further questions.
Representative Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good bill. This is a good idea. And again, we've heard it a number of times. This should have happened. Here's the reality of it today, folks, is that members, we really almost can't stand up one more thing in the state because of the money situation is real. We just don't have it going forward. We don't have the ability to hire anybody. DHS is bursting at the seams trying to pull together all these new programs. We're going to hear later about DC&T. That is something that I think is actually going to bring us, I would hope and expect, more accountability. But everything that we are talking about now is going to cost money up front, even at DHS saying, don't exactly know what this is going to be now to just sort of look at it, because the bill isn't quite there to tell us that. But if we spent anything on it this year, we may not have any money next year left, because we still have a deficit going forward. The problem is we're going to have to really prioritize the spending going forward, because keeping people in their home is really important. The program is good, Representative Ryer, thanks for bringing this. It's just my concern is everything we do now to hire one more person with any agency in the state of Minnesota costs us now a lot more money because of employer mandates, other things that come along top of it. So we had a window of time to maybe do some really good things like this. I'm concerned that we almost need to say what new programs are out there because the agencies can't build one more thing, in my opinion, because I'm seeing them work really hard and fast to try to get up what's going now. We're moving too fast for them to get people going. It's a good program. I want to see this happen someday, but we have to be cognizant of the checkbook, and we don't have the money like we thought we did, and it's gone. So, again, thank you. Let's work on this, but I don't think this is the time to bring it forward because it's going to have to wait till we have more funds. Thank you.
Any further discussion from members? Just wanted to note that thank you so much, Representative Ryer. I think when you got the bill last year, just kind of dropped to you and say, you know, you were told just run with it. But I appreciate that you took the time and we succeeded in starting the initiative as we did. And I think we will continue to have the conversation. Any closing remarks from you?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was important that we do the rate study. We had to make progress. We had to get started, and we accomplished that. I would also just like to argue that the pieces that we have moving right now, including the recommendations and the recommendations in this bill, give us the opportunity to continue to not lose time, even as we are not committing to full-scale build-out. So thank you very much for considering it for inclusion.
Thank you so much. With that, I renew my motion that House File 4839 be laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill is House File 4692, and I'll be switching chairs.
Welcome to the table, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 4692 be laid over.
Okay. Chair Noor moves House File 4692 to be laid over for possible inclusion. And, Mr. Chair, I understand you have an amendment.
Madam Chair, I do have A2 amendment.
All right. Chair Noor would like to move the A2 amendment. Chair Noor, would you briefly like to describe your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment changes by deleting the section which voting members of the executive board will receive compensation of $500 per day spent on board activities. Instead, A2 amendment specifies that compensation council must determine the compensation of voting members. Also, it specifies that voting members and non-voting members can get reimbursement for expenses related to childcare. That's essentially what the A2 amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can ad lib a little, I will say thank you for adding that childcare provision in. I know that can be a really big barrier for folks to participate, so I really appreciate that addition. With that, do we have any discussion? Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Noor. I looked over it briefly. I didn't see anything with the compensation, particularly for childcare. Is there any income restriction on that?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Lead New Brindley, I think there isn't much in the restriction on the childcare because it's the activities related to the board. So I'm not aware of any restrictions with that section of the law, the chapter 15 point. Don't recall exactly, but I haven't seen any restriction under that.
Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Any additional member discussion? Seeing none, we will go ahead and vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Okay. And then the motion passes and the A2 amendment is adopted. It looks like we have an additional amendment. Representative Baker, will you be putting that forward?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Baker would like to move the A3 amendment. And Representative Baker, would you like to speak to that amendment?
I would. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Members, again, I have found this conversation very interesting, trying to take this huge department of ours and slicing it down, and this is going to be still a lot of work in motion. Appreciate Representative Knorr bringing it forward. I have talked to DC&T about my amendment about the consideration of a couple more non-voting members because of what I've learned on the Opioid Advisory Council. So a couple years ago, again, when we passed the ORAC bill, we have a council that is very active. We decide where the money actually goes. We don't have to bring it back here. We collect the licensing dollars. We now are also part of the settlement dollars coming to ORAC, and we decide where this goes. What I have learned through this process, and I feel like it's important that we do this, no matter who's running the show around here, whether who's in the governor's office, who's in the Senate, who's in the majority, doesn't matter. What I like about what I have that I have found as chair of the ORAC Council most recently is that I have a member from each caucus sitting at the table so they know what we're doing. They don't, let's see, I think my members are voting members on this council. I'm suggesting not be voting members in this amendment, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. And I think it's important to say, no matter who's in charge, this is a significant change in how we're going to run our most difficult hospitals in the state of Minnesota, whether it's Kids Hospital we have out in Wilmer, or St. Peter, Anoka, AMSOP, all these things. It's really going to be a challenge. And the folks that have to do this have to really know what they're doing. I'm looking forward to whoever is running our bodies in the next years and beyond needs to have someone at the table that can be seeing firsthand what is happening, both positive and negative, both to bring back to our caucuses, but not let this get political. And I really found that with ORAC, they were able to do that because right now, although the governor is going to be able to appoint these the five or seven or nine board members now, I sense that we need to do something right about making sure that our members from any team in the future is going to be in those rooms hearing directly from our leadership team. This is going to be important to me. So I wanted to bring it up as an amendment. I hope this is looked at as a real friendly because it's actually the right way to do this because we don't want this to get political. And I am hoping that our agency and Chair Knorr would allow this to happen and we can continue to work on this. But I think this is an important item to have for the hospital level of care that these patients are going to need. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker, for giving us that your firsthand experience in how commissions and councils really function. As you recall, this the way we are separating DCT from DHS is to create a state agency, which means it's a little bit different than some of the commissions and councils that we have because it's going to have not run by commission but the executive board, which will be responsible for that. I think with that reasoning, we're trying to avoid the legislature getting involved in how agencies are functioning and to allow the DCT executive board to be functioned at the level of the administration, but more separate so that we can have that board really make their decisions. So I think with the amendment, which is really important to have that oversight is never lost because we are still funding DCT. We are responsible in making sure that they get their budget from us, and we also have still make those decisions for them. So this is not just giving them the that we're not going to be responsible for what is happening at DCT. We are going to be involved no matter what we do. So I think this, including legislatures to be involved, we're extending ourselves to be in a place whereby the administration should be responsible for running what's happening at DCT. With that, I will urge, you know, members to vote no on the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And it looks like we do have one member on the list for discussion, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, because you're allowing 5 years of expedited rulemaking from the data transfer, I think it would be prudent if you got that 5 years, that you have these additional non-voting people there for the discussion to be able to understand, because that's a pretty extensive time period of expedited rulemaking. And early on, additional conversations, even if that is not, it's non-voting oversight, I think is reasonable. So, you know, frankly, I'm confused because you're saying it's just another agency that's being created, but not with the special rulemaking for that extensive period of time. So I would hope for a yes vote for this amendment.
Mr. Chair, do you care to comment on anything?
Not on this issue. I think the rulemaking is always reserved for agencies, and because we are creating a new agency in this process, it's prudent to have the tools necessary to move to become a state agency and to adopt those changes. But as you can see, we've got nine members and two non-voting members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you meant seven voting members and two non-voting, nine total.
Yep.
Thank you for that. We also have Representative New Brindley on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker, for the amendment. I would just suggest, Chair Knorr, that, I mean, the fact that these are non-voting members being proposed, I assume, I guess I didn't ask Representative right. Baker this directly, but I assume this is to remove any conflict of interest with having the legislative branch engaging with executive branch functions that way. That's why they're non-voting members. And I would just add, you know, I mean, you say that we as the legislature still have oversight. With all due respect, I suspect folks on both sides of this table have experienced enormous frustration with our oversight role in that we don't get much information. We get whatever agencies choose to tell us. And by having legislative branch appointees in the room, not making decisions, not taking votes, they know what's going on. And that's oversight, knowing what's going on. But the way this system is set up right now with so many functions in our state government, and it is particularly frustrating with programs that fall under DHS, we don't have real oversight. We only know what we're told. We should have people in this room. We know how large and unwieldy direct care and treatment has been. We should have people in the room being able to ask the right questions so that we at least know what's going on so we can provide that proper oversight. This is a no-brainer yes vote on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional discussion? Representative Baker.
Final comments, I think, on this, Madam Chair. Again, this is to try to make it so that we don't make it political. Because as Chair Knorr said, we're always going to be involved in this. Not to this level, we're not. We're going to be in charge of the money. We're going to be in charge of how we fund and where we fund. But eyeballs in the room on this issue is going to be critical for us to know our jobs better. And I learned that firsthand. And, you know, there's times right now with our work in ORAC the last three years, I defend DHS. Ask your colleagues, because I've been in there working through the system. So if you don't believe what I'm trying to say is truly the right thing to do, you know, we'll have a vote on the House floor on this amendment. This is coming. I'm not going to give up on this because I'm a believer now that I've seen it firsthand. This is how we should do it better, because as legislators that get consumed with so many things, and this issue is going to be so important to us in the future, no matter who is in charge, it brings us all together because that member, and again, I sort of assume it would be one of our leads or someone who knows the healthcare system pretty well in these bodies that would possibly want to sit on this board, because it's going to be a lot of work. So I guess I just really believe in it. I you know, I won't call for a roll call, but I just want to say this is important. So, members, I know where this is probably going to go today. Let's do it. I hope you pass it, because I want to have you think about this, because you're going to see it again. I think this is important, and I don't know what we're hurting by having four members from two political parties that are going to be part of the decision-making process, why that is not going to help Jan out. This is going to be a big thing, and I want to be part of that. I'm not saying I want to be part of the board, but this is an important thing, and again, I really do encourage members to vote yes in this, because this is the right thing to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Any final comments, Chair Noor?
Thank you, members, for the discussion. I think this bill is being laid over. We'll still continue to have conversation about this bill. So I just wanted to proceed at this point to vote no on the amendment, and we'll come back to many other issues as we proceed with this session.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seeing no further discussion, we will go ahead to the vote. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. All right, and it looks like the motion does not pass, and the A3 amendment is not adopted. Chair Noor, do you want to go ahead and speak to your bill as a whole?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that conversation. I think we've had several discussions about DCT separation, and we also successfully codified the changes in the statute just a few weeks ago. And this is a great opportunity to really make changes that are necessary to get going with how the DCT will be functioning. With me today, I do have a testifier who's going to be helping us and guiding us and walk us through the bill. Mr. Stockett is with us, and he will help us and guide us on that.
All right. And then we have before us today Dan Storkamp.
Yes.
If I get that right. If you want to go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record, and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity today. I'm Dan Storkamp, Director of Operation Services, and also the DCT Incident Commander around the DCT creation project. I know I've been here before you a few times and talking through the bill, so I'll make this fairly quick. Again, as background, we actually got special permission from the governor's office to share language with stakeholders, tribes, counties, unions, as well as other stakeholders, provided a lot of input into the process. While we couldn't take everything, we incorporated many of those things in the process. I'll point out a few as I go through. We've got four different groupings that I'm going to lump this bill into. The first grouping is, as the revisor's office created their language, they did not change anything. They just moved it from where it is to where it needs to be. But in the process, DCT as a new agency does need some additional things added. So you're going to see things like adding us to government-to-government tribal relations. We're going to be added to data practices. We're being added to the unclassified service. Our social welfare fund, which is our basically bank accounts for all of our clients and our patients. And it creates special revenue funds like other state agencies and DHS, including the facility management, system account, gifts, grants, and contributions, as well as the cemetery maintenance in that process. Group two looks specifically at the board and the board members and the board role. As Chair Noor mentioned, we've got a seven-member board, two non-voting members, five voting members. Five voting members are the psychiatrist or a physician with behavioral health background. The commissioner of DHS, and this was something that our stakeholders said, how is DHS going to be coordinated with DCT as we move forward? So this was an attempt to make that transition there. Two members with experience of hospital or nonprofit boards, bringing that in. And then where there was two members previously, we actually added a third member, so there's three members with backgrounds of healthcare administration, behavioral health, healthcare professionals, traditional healing, which was asked for by the tribe specifically, or organized labor. They also asked that one member be from Greater Minnesota to provide that representation. And to avoid conflict, the voting members, so non-voting, I'll get to in a minute, but voting members cannot be a current or within a year individual who was either a union member, county member, a DCT member or the legislature for those voting members. Now, the two non-voting members are appointed. The unions will appoint be appointed from AMC, and the labor representative non-voting will be voted or will be appointed by the labor representatives representing DCT overall. The roles and responsibilities and logistics, this is things like quorum of the meetings, conflict of interest is there, indemnification of the board members, expedited rulemaking that was talked about earlier, as well as the delegated authority to the CEO in that process. Remember, DCT is still a government agency. We're still going to be abiding by the governor. We're still coming before the legislature. We still got federal and state oversight in that process. The third group is really in the bill is looking at changing the date. This is the date that the board actually takes over the responsibility, which is moving from January 1, which is current law, to July 1 of 25. This is to allow for operational alignment with both the budget as well as the union contracts. Then on the board itself, they will be appointed by January 1. This gives them the ability to work with the commissioner and DCT as they transition, and with the budget coming forward, they're actually involved in that process. So when they take it over, they'll have some background experience in that process. And then the fourth area is really technical. Just as DCT became an agency, we needed some additional things added that would provide that. Several of those may be a part of the revisers bill, but we haven't seen some of those aspects, so there may be a couple duplications that they're going to have to figure out as they move forward. But in a nutshell, that's the bill that's before you here.
Thank you for that. And then we have also an additional testifier, Matt Freeman. If you'd like to come on down. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. If you'd like to go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Matt Freeman. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. With the determination to separate direct care and treatment from DHS in the last legislative session, counties feel it's very important that their perspective is considered and reflected in the legislation brought before us. Counties know that DCT, as our state safety net, meets the needs of people with particularly complex needs who are unable to be served in the community. DCT is an essential government partner to serve those whom private providers can't or will not serve. Currently, DCT remains underdeveloped to address the immediate needs of residents, but DCT is not alone. There are challenges and gaps within many levels of service in Minnesota's mental health system that needs expansion. Today, Minnesota's safety net too often appears to be hospital emergency rooms, jails, and other inappropriate settings. We feel that by better partnering between DCT, DHS's behavioral health unit, and counties, we can work to support developing the behavioral health continuum of care that we need. We want to thank you last session for accommodating AMC and Max's request for experience in delivery of behavioral health and care coordination to be added to the applicable skills of desired board members. That experience and knowledge is really essential alongside healthcare administration knowledge to the new agency's success. And counties are uniquely qualified to provide that expertise. And as such, we ask for a voting seat on the future board to be subject to the appointment by AMC. We hope that the additional transparency and accountability provided by a voting AMC or county board and bringing that essential perspective to the leadership at DCT will strengthen the engagement, not only quality of service within DCT, but engagement in community. We have remaining concerns or questions about some of the conflict of interest language, in particular, the one-year delay for county staff to be able to serve on that board. We do recognize that that has been amended for those who are non-voting members, but we don't see that same language called out for those who serve on hospital or nonprofit boards. Currently, we have a number of commissioners and county staff that serve on hospital boards and do well. We're not seeking to create an opportunity for conflict of interest, but find that the expertise that folks bring to the discussion will enrich the leadership of DCT. We in particular see a contrast between the DHS commissioner participating as a voting member and counties as part of that continuum of care not being represented the same way. We appreciate the work that DCT has done and the author has done to engage with counties. We look forward to continue the conversation about how we can best structure leadership of DCT. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. And Chair Noor, any comments before we move to discussion? All right. With that, we'll open it up to member discussion. Any members with questions? Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question about the membership. I don't see any expertise or relation to children's services or child welfare. And I'm just wondering if that has been considered given DCT's current role in MYTH and what may become an additional child role as we continue to see the needs of children in Minnesota, many of which are being sent out of state. So just wondering if there's going to be any connection on that side, because with children and families separating, that DHS involvement won't cover that component in the same way that I think originally it would have.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. I will be calling my testify to help us and guide us. But what I wanted to note is there isn't specific notification in terms of how the board will be appointed, whether they have expertise or experience in children with behavioral health. But I'll let the Mr. Stockham to respond to that.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Hicks, the positions that we've got on the board really are the generic areas that we've talked about, and they can be adult or juvenile experience in that process. We are separating from DCT and DCYF, or DHS and DCYF, but the three organizations will continue to work together so that there is that common thread in the directions that we're going in many of these areas. We anticipate that we're brothers and sisters in the process, if you will, as we kind of proceed forward. So I anticipate that we'll continue to proceed with that, but it is available.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sturkham. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that commitment, but frankly, I think we should maybe have a broader discussion because, you know, I think back to Jensen, where those individuals had interacted with our child welfare system and then interacted with DCT, and then we ended up with Olmstead, right? So I really want to make sure that we're not leaving that piece out of the conversation, given the data we've heard from the department about what are the common themes of the youth that we are finding that are unable to leave our hospitals, and the youth that we're finding that are difficult to place. There are common themes there, and they are the interaction with the child welfare system. And so I think it is something that we need to discuss.
Thank you for that. Representative Baker.
Thank you. And Mr. Sorkamp, thanks. I'm going to maybe ask you this question too. So what we're doing now, again, is, and again, I kind of, I'm not replaying what my other amendment was, but when we built ORAC, we had all kinds of people coming in saying, I want to be on that council too. I want to be there. I want to be there. It's because they're desperate to be heard. We heard the counties come forward to say, we really have some concern about not having that seat. I understand keeping the board members tight. I don't think bigger is always better. But what I am asking maybe is there's this separation. I still have some concerns about having the commissioner of DHS on this board. I don't know that I see that as being a healthy inclusion at this point. I'm still trying to understand that better. But like our county partners, like other partners that want to see what's going on, how are you going to, or what is the plan now to have this board, nine so far, seven plus two, how is it going to be hearing other ideas, other concerns? How transparent are we actually getting this to the people? Part of this separation is you're bringing it closer. But people are concerned that they're not going to have a voice, or you know, how are you going to hear them if it's really pretty closed up? How are you going to maybe start with advisory councils, listening boards? What is the plan, I guess, initially of this, if you could explain that to us?
Mr. Storkamp.
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Baker. Representative Baker, first let me say thank you for your continued support for DCT over the years. It's been phenomenal, and we appreciate that. As we looked for this, or look forward on the developing this whole board and the board process, we heard not only from the counties and the unions, but from many of the other areas saying that we don't have a voice. Other stakeholders like NAMI, and can you have representation from people that are part of the process as well? We, as the board gets developed, that is some what we're going to be looking at is putting together an advisory council or a consortium that will work with the board to get that input. We're looking at an annual review of the environment for Minnesota across the board as we look at our services, and that'll be something the board will be reviewing and getting input from all those areas and processes to help give us that foundation piece of kind of where to move forward and how to move forward.
Thank you. Mr. Sturkamp, Representative Baker, any follow-up?
No, you have rulemaking authority here. There's going to be people that really do want to be at that table, like I think legislators ought to be there, because they actually have a very important role to play in continuing, like I have been, supporting DC&T, but we can do it better when we're actually there with you. And so, again, the counties are our local partners. That's what they do all day, every day. And yet you're dealing with the most, you know, toughest patients that we all have to care for. So there's going to be so many eyeballs looking at how is this going to work. I'm just making sure that we have the discussions now when we implement this to have it a little bit more broad than a little bit more closed. And I think that that's going to be okay for the public side of things. More transparency is better than not enough. So I offer that, and I hope that we continue to look at this, because I think we need advisors, we need, you know, consulting. It's not a very big group of people managing a huge part of our budget here. So again, I just want to add that on. I'm worried the counties are not there, but I also am not suggesting we just blow up the board as well. So we got to get this right.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I mean, certainly I know one of the roles and responsibilities listed among them for the board is recommendations to the legislature on appropriate changes to law, but also making recommendations to the board in terms of like an advisory council roles, things like that. And certainly I hope that DCT will continue to take that role seriously and make those recommendations so that we make sure that all voices are at the table as we move forward with creating this new agency. All right, Representative New Brindley, you had a question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was a question, but based on the conversation, now it's just a comment. And thank you, Mr. Sturkamp, for your testimony. And what I just heard you say is, you know, you heard from lots of people who would like access, essentially, right? Would like to have some input. You said you heard from not only counties, but unions. I don't remember if it was Representative Baker or you who mentioned NAMI. I am frustrated because you've heard from lots of groups who probably should have a seat at the table. As Representative Hicks indicated, certainly child welfare. But child welfare, our counties, NAMI, legislators, there's a lot of groups who likely should be included. Now, you mentioned you heard from unions, and I'm a little frustrated. You know, on lines 22.17 to 22.1, you lay out where three of the board members will come from. And I'm going to skip the first one because you've got delivery of behavioral health. You've got licensed healthcare professional. You've got healthcare administration. You've got residential services. These are all direct care. These are all care seats on this board. And yet you include the public labor union on this one. But when you scroll down to the top of page 23, that labor union representative can't be from direct care and treatment. This is just any public labor union that's being given a seat at the table in place of, potentially, it's allowed here, caregivers. Plus, they get one of the non-voting spots. So we are ignoring counties, NAMI, child welfare, legislators, but boy, we're giving them two spots. Maybe, could be more. Those three spots could be three spots there. Voting members. Again, I'm baffled by what we're doing here.
All right. Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Any comments, Chair Noor or Mr. Sturkamp?
Oh, sorry. All right, Representative Quam, I'm sorry, you had a question as well.
Well, yeah, I'm just shocked that of who we're not allowing on there, and yeah, the people that directly interact at the county level would be a great input when you're developing a new agency where a lot of the deliverables are in with the counties. Mm-hmm. I see that as a huge glaring oversight and mistake. But you referenced that you're moving existing functions in. My biggest concern is that for decades, there have been repetitive errors and mistakes that have been uncovered in audits and haven't been corrected. And I'm looking for appropriate systems and procedures and oversight for control, review, and documentation to actually implement the things that have been coming up over and 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 over again when there have been audits and mistakes. The agency, there's special revenue accounts for gifts, grants, contributions. There's social welfare fund. There are a lot of areas for mistakes. And if it wasn't for the fact that I have seen repetitive issues in the departments, you're pulling this together from, and I thought that, well, maybe that's part of the reason why you're wanting expedited rulemaking. I don't know why you should take 5 years to reinvent and fix stuff. I see a lot of nodding there and smiling, but I'm not hearing any response to the questions about why you're not allowing the counties a voice, because they're a key partner here. And I'm not hearing why, you know, you need this extensive period of time. So I guess from my reading of your expression, I'm guessing you're thinking, well, we've got this. It's going to get in the bill. So we're just going through the motions. And I would actually, you know, the people listening at home would probably actually want to hear the responses of how you're going to improve the missing stuff and actually answer why you aren't including the counties when you're included, you know, as pointed out. So, you know, if you answer, fine. If not, I won't be surprised.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Starkham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, you've stated exactly why we have talked about how and why the counties should have a voice on the table. So the main reason that we're looking into is the conflict of interest. When you have got counties being provided service by DCT, that issue of conflict of interest usually comes up. And that's why you've seen the change, as having the voice of the counties to appoint someone to be a non-voting member. So they do have a voice, but they're non-voting member on the board.
Oh. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Conflict of interest, I would think that the multiple spots for labor unions would be a conflict of interest, you know, more than the people in the counties that I've interacted with that care about the individuals. They're trying to do the best that they can. They're doing the job. It's not an easy job, and they're there because they care. And I would love to have more voice to the people that are on the front lines helping and caring for the individuals that are covered here.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair or Mr. Storkamp, any additional comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's some few things that are still in motion in terms of making sure we've got a tight board. We've talked about comparative. This we're talking about state safety net hospital, and we know how tightly hospitals are run. And we will still keep on cleaning up to make sure that we address that issue. The union actually should have been more on the non-voting member, but we'll continue to have that conversation. This bill is being laid over. We still have got some time to keep on working on it until it is ready to go.
Mr. Storkamp.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, I'm going to acknowledge right up front that we've had some issues in the past about reports from the legislative auditor and others kind of pointing out several of the areas that we've got. What I can say is our compliance officer just reported recently that we have solved all those issues, and we've got none of our licenses under conditional licensing at this point. This is just something that we've moved towards over the last several years, so fully understand exactly what you're saying, and those are the type of things that we're really hoping to incorporate into the process here. But thank you for acknowledging that, and we look forward to working with you on these things.
Okay. We were kind of getting close to closing, but it looks like there's one additional comment from Lead New Brindley.
Just a quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the intention with this bill? Is this going to be rolled into an omnibus? Will this move forward as a standalone bill? What's the intention with this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Lead New Brindley, we're still working on making sure we have got everything ready to go. And I think this bill may or may not be included in omnibus bill, so we're still working on it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think I would just like to say, you know, I think what I hear here is I appreciate that there's a really robust discussion on this. I know, Mr. Storkamp, you and I have had a number of conversations about process and how things work internally, what it looks to have experts and multiple levels of feedback channels so that the folks who are doing the work on the ground actually have a say in the new agency, what it looks like, how it will work, what the process and procedures will look like. And I know we've had extensive conversation on that, so I really appreciate that. And I do appreciate, and I'm encouraged by the fact that there's a real desire around this table for folks to get it right. And I really appreciate a lot of the questions and the comments from the other side of the aisle here. I think it shows that there is a real interest in getting this right and doing it right the first time. And so I really appreciate that. And as the chair mentioned, we do still have some time here to continue to have those conversations and make sure that we are including all those voices at the table. And with that, seeing no more member discussion, we will go ahead and go to a vote on. Sorry?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
I just wanted to end by saying I'd like to renew my motion that House 54692 as amended to be laid over.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then with that, House File 4692 as amended will be laid over. With that, we have no additional business before the committee today, and thus we are adjourned.